The title of today's class, even though I don't normally give a title, it's Parshas Vayera, is the name of the Parsha. The title is the Motzi Shabbos Rush, or the Motzi Shabbos Dash. So if you have to stick around to hear the how it relates to that, the Motzi Shabbos Dash. So the Parsha is... the parasha which contains the story of the three angels that came to visit Avraham Avinu after his bris milah. That's how the parasha begins, and we learn the great lesson of Hachnosas Orchim, of having guests, of welcoming guests, and even to the point, as the Medrash says, that the that when these angels came to Avraham didn't realize they were angels; he just thought they were regular nomad travelers. And he was actually in communication. He was having a nevuah with Hashem when these travelers came. And he gets up and he rushes towards these three guests who are coming. And then we learn from this how great it Hachnosas Orchim, greater than Kabbalas Pnei Shechina, than receiving the divine presence, because he's talking to Hashem. And he says to Hashem, please wait over here. And I have to go ahead and take care of these travelers coming in. It's really a remarkable narrative. I mean, if a great rabbi comes in, or a Rosh Hashiva, you're sitting with the Rosh Hashiva, having an audience with the Rosh Hashiva, and three, whatever, just regular people walking by, street people walking by, knocking on the door for some help to get up and leave, is a very astounding idea. Mm-hmm. But it's what the Gemara highlights as being the greater, because what the concept is that emulating Hashem is better than speaking to Hashem. Emulating Hashem is better than communing with Hashem, because by emulating someone, or Hashem in this case, by emulating Hashem, you are being like Hashem. You are being Hashem. You're really bringing Hashem's presence into your life by emulating the ways of Hashem. So since Hashem is kulo chesed, completely doing chesed and kindness, so then our mimicking that trait is a greater closeness to Hashem. That's the very famous lesson we learned, the beginning of the parasha. But the part which I wanted to zoom into, with the Medrash as well, is the episode of Lot, who's Avram's nephew. And Lot, he lives in Sodom, and Sodom is a corrupt place. And after the destruction of Sodom, so Lot flees from Sodom, and the only survivors of Sodom, of this destruction of Sodom, is Lot, his wife, and his two daughters. But then his wife dies in the pillar of salt, and then the only real survivors, the only ultimate survivors of the destruction of Sodom, is Lot and his two daughters, Bechira and Seira. They are the names of the two daughters. And so the pasuk says that Ya Lot Mitzah V'yeshev Bahar. The Lot came up from Soar, and he dwelt in the mountain area, in the mountain. Ushtei benos avimo, and his two daughters were with him. Ki yorei l'shevas betzor, he was afraid to dwell in Soar, v'yeshev b'mara. He instead dwelt inside a cave. Ushtei benos avimo, and his two daughters. Then it goes on. V'toma b'chira l'tzira. B'chira says to Tzira, the other sister, Avinu zaken, our father is old. V'ish ein ba'aretz. There is no person in the world. They thought that everyone had died with this destruction of Sodom. They thought that everybody, the entire world, were dead. Ein ba'aretz lava, v'ish ein ba'aretz lava elena. There's no person in the entire world who can marry us and have children. Kederek kol ha'aretz. L'cha nashka es avino. Let us go ahead and give wine to our father to drink, b'layla at night. V'tava b'chir v'tishka v'asaviya. So she gave the wine to her father, and she consorted with him in the night, because she thought that they were the only survivors, and the only way that they could have children is only if they would do this act. And then he didn't realize, the pasuk says, he didn't know what happened, at least ostensibly he didn't know what had happened. And then the next day she said to her younger sister, to Tzira, to do the same thing. And the second night also, so Tzira consorted with her father the second night after getting drunk with wine. And then from these unions, the amazing thing is the nations of Moab and Ammon came from these this union, these two unions. But most notably, is that from Moab, the older sister, Bechira is the older sister, and she called her son Moab, right? Because the word Moab is the same letters as Me'av, from my father. And that that child was the ancestor of who? David HaMelech, right? Because Ruth came from him, came from Moab, and then eventually David HaMelech, and then Mashiach, right, comes from this union. So the whole story is very, quite a provocative story. So the Medrash, and this is the Medrash chapter 51, number 9. In the Medrash addresses this whole story. And the Medrash says, it says that there were some rabbis, their names were Reb Yudin of Galya and Reb Shmuel Bar Nachman. They were both discussing this parasha. Amrim Yeshua, they said in the name of, an interesting name over here, I've never heard his name. They said in the name of Rebbe Eliyahu Einai, that was the name of the sage. And they said in the name of Rebbe Eliyahu Einai, Einanu Yodim im lot nisavul of Anosov im benos nisavul lo. When we read the narrative, they said, you just read the verses on the surface. It says, we don't know, we can't really tell who are the more immoral players in the story. Were the more immoral players the daughters or Lot? Right? Now, on the one hand, you'd say the daughters, they initiated this. But on the other hand, they had a good excuse because they thought they were the only survivors after the destruction of the Sodom. On the other hand, maybe it was Lot because he's allowing himself to get drunk. And there's even allusions to the fact that even though it says, I said before in verse 33, it says that he didn't realize what had happened when she lay with him and when she got up, you'll notice and look if you look in the Chumash, the word Vukuma has dots above the word. There's one dot. It's dotted above the word Vukuma. So dots, it's unusual. You never find nakudos, you never find dots and lines in the Torah scroll. Because there are no nakuda, there are no vowels in the Torah scroll. With the exception of once in a while, very few places in the Chumash, there are dots above the letters, and it's significant. It's darshan. So Rashi says because even though it says literally or superficially, it says that he didn't realize that she lay down with that he was laying down with her, and that he got up, right, and that she got up. He didn't realize that he had no idea about it. But by saying that with the dot above the word vakuma, it alludes to the fact that he really was aware of the fact that when she got up, he realized Yoda and Bafal P came, but nonetheless, he didn't hold himself back from the second night with Tzira, the younger daughter. So there is an illusion over here, but on the surface, there's no indication who's really the immoral party. Is it the daughters? Is it Lot? We don't know. And that's what the Chachamim in the Medrash say. When we read the narrative, we don't know who's the immoral people. Is it Lot's daughters or is it Lot himself allowing himself to get drunk? But then the Medrash continues until it's answered by a Pasuk in Mishlei. The Pasuk in Mishlei says, and we learned this several weeks ago in Shari Teshuva. The Pasuk says, L'sava yivakesh nifra, which means that someone who pursues desire and passion ends up getting separated, loses relationships. Those who pursue taiva and desire and self-indulgence, they end up eventually losing their relationships with other people. Such a trait, such a mode of behavior doesn't augment good relationships. And a person is self-indulgent, pursuing their desires, only looking for what they can get out of life. They tend not to have close relationships with other people because people don't really want to be around those people. So because that part, so the pasuk says, "Lasava yivakish nifra," someone who's separated is because they're pursuing desires. Well, who got separated? Who was separated? Have a Lot, right? Lot separated himself. Earlier in last week's parasha, Lot separated from Avram. He separated from it. They weren't able to live together any longer. And that's a telltale sign of pursuing desire. That someone who's separated, someone who is isolated, someone who is away from everyone else and is not welcomed and not able to have a relationship with other people, it's a telltale sign of the fact that they are you know, overindulgent and emboldened their desires and their taivas. So therefore, that's the answer. That's the answer the Medrash gives. So they said the fact that he's a separated person, he separated himself and went to live in Sodom, that was the telltale sign that he was a taiva yavakesh, a pursuer of desire. And you know, when you start learning it more thoroughly, you see all the different allusions. Many, many examples. Just to cite a couple of examples where you see the remozim and the allusions, the fact that the Lot was a baltaiva. He was a person of just very, very self-indulgent. So one example is this. It's very interesting if you look at these little nuances in the psukim. Very telling example is in Bereshis. Let's see, this is Bereshis 14:12. This is an interesting one because this is Rav Shimon Schwab points this out. He says, look at the pasuk. It says that this is when Lot was taken by you know, in the war with Kedar LaOmer and the war of the allies, the four kings against the five kings. So Kedar LaOmer and his allies overtook Sodom. And then they took, they kidnapped Lot. So the pasuk says, "V'yikchu es Lot." They took Lot ves ruchusho and his possessions. Ben Achi Avram, the nephew of Avram. V'yelchu, and they went for who Yosheb Stone, and Lot was living in Sodom at the time. But this is a real unusual phraseology of this pasuk. "V'yikchu es Lot." They took Lot and his possessions, his nephew. Right, they should say they took Lot, his nephew, and his possessions. Right. They took Lot and Avram's nephew and his possessions. So it says, they took Lot and his possessions, the nephew of Avram. So what's that telling you?
The possessions
divided their relationship.
Yes.
His pursuit of possessions, his pursuit of his materialism is what divided the relationship, which was the indication, one of the illusions, the fact that Lot was this. I'm saying this because when you read through the psukim, when you read through these parashas, it doesn't jump out any on the. You read the verses alone without the Torah Shebal Peh, without these midrashim, without these allusions, it doesn't say explicitly that Lot was a baltai, an expression of one who was preoccupied with his desires. It doesn't say it explicitly. It's all derived. It's all alluded to. But this is a very, very clear indication that his materialism, his possessions, is what divided himself from Avram, right? So this is who he was. And the Medrash goes on even further in the Medrash, the present Medrash, which you're looking at, that it says that, and I've lost the place. Let's see where it's over here. Yeah, got it. So the Medrash even says, like, very, very horrible, I mean, the horrible experience, but it's the way what it was. Rav Nachman Bar Chanan said, "Kol mishu lo et acha bumba shel arayas," anybody who is craving after immorality, then sof shemachilu mosav ben basara, eventually his end is going to be to eat from his own flesh. And that's what happened to him. Because he's so preoccupied with his immorality. So what was his end? His daughters. He eats from his own flesh. He has from his own flesh, from his daughters. But at the end of the day, right, Lot's daughters were not the guilty party. They were not guilty of anything. They really genuinely thought that society was over and there was no more people alive. And, you know, but Lot was the one. He was the immoral one in the story. He was the immoral one in the story.
That was earlier.
There's a story in 1921, right? Just to illustrate the innocence of the daughters. This is a true story. In 1921, Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the great posuk of the generation, so he was a rav in Lubin, I believe the city was, in Lubin in Europe. He writes in his, and he tells this, he writes the story himself. He said when he was in Lubin in 1921, he was a rav there, and a certain individual, apparently a Talmud Chacham, a scholar in his own right, had this terrible illness, had a terrible condition with his tongue. His tongue had become so swollen, and it was incurable, and it was blocking, it was impeding his breathing, and he was deathly ill. There was no cure for it. They couldn't figure out what was going on with him, and it was such an enlarged tongue, and it was the most unusual illness, and his life was threatened. And he spoke to Rav Moshe Feinstein. But he told him he wanted to speak to him privately. So he tells him, he said a while ago, he said,
on Parshas Vayir, and this fellow, this happened to, he was a big Talmud Chacham, and he said to Moshe, he said that several weeks ago, whenever it was, Parshas Vayir, this Parsha, so he was learning and he was giving a drasha about this episode of the daughters of Lot. And he says to him, he said, I really had a hard time with this understanding, and I felt it was like so not right and so immoral and so not appropriate. You know, obviously he didn't know the Medrash because we just learned the Medrash now to explain that, to exonerate them. But in his own initial reading of it, he was feeling it's just so immoral, so inappropriate what they did with their father. And then on top of that, for the first one to name the child Moab after the actual event itself, the relationship itself. And on top of that, Mashiach comes from this. Like, I don't understand it. He was saying that I was criticizing the story and had negative thoughts towards the whole thing. So he said that night after he expressed himself publicly this way, he had a dream. And Moshe Feinstein writes this in his personal experience of what this person said. He said that this person, and in the dream, two elderly ladies came to him in a dream, dressed in long robes. There were two old women coming to him in a dream. And who were they? They were the daughters of Lot's two daughters. They came to him in a dream. And they explained to him, and they said to him in the dream, that everything we did was 100% L'Shem Shemayim. We did it totally L'Shem Shemayim because we truly thought that civilization was over. And the reason why we named the first one, Moab, is in order to eliminate any possibility that anybody should ever say that this child is either a deity or born of a deity. Reminiscent of, the other religion, right? Because that's what they say. Because who would have imagined that the father would have done this with his daughter? So they would have started to think, "Oh, this is a son of God, son of God." And in order to eliminate, to obviate that possibility, that's why we named him Moab. And that's exactly the reward, so to speak, we got was the fact that Taka, the real Mashiach, came from him. The real Mashiach comes from this child, from this Moab child. That's the dream which he relates to Reb Moshe Feinstein. And then Reb Moshe Feinstein says that after he told him this dream, and also the reason why they said to him that the reason why your tongue has this condition is it's a midah keneged midah, it's a lashon, the slander that you spoke against us. And it's reminiscent of also the story of the Meraglim. The spies who spoke slander about Eretz Yisrael, also the Medrash says that they had this terrible catastrophe with something happening with their mouth, their tongues, and an illness with their tongue, and that's how they died. And they said, this is the onesh, this is the punishment you're getting for the slander you spoke against us. And then after this, Reb Moshe Feinstein says that he passed away. So this is an astounding story, and you learn a lot of things from it. A few things you learn from it is, number one, be very, very cautious. And this is such a practical idea. Be very, very cautious to be cynical about anything we learn about in the Chumash, in the Tanakh, and the stories, and the Chazal, and what the rabbis tell us. We have to, as a rule, we have to have the utmost reverence for everything which we learn. We only know a tiny bit of everything there is to learn. The tiniest amount. There's so much more depth and so much more meaning to everything, to have even the thought and even the consideration to have any cynical, God forbid, laughing, God forbid, all these things. Never do. Don't get into that type of situation of speaking this way against anything in Tanakh or anything against Chazal. That's number one. And secondly, you get the idea that the idea of the continuity of the soul, afterlife, etc. But as it applies to this, we see again another illustration. But the daughters of Lot, they were not the guilty parties, right? It was Lot. He was the Baltaiva. He was the one who was full of promiscuity and immorality. And then the Medrash continues. The same Medrash continues and says that the... So the Medrash continues and says, "Reb Tanchuma bar Rebbe Chia, in the name of Reb Hushaya, the Torgeman, said the following: Ein kol Shabbos for Shabbos she'ein korim ba parshas shalot. There is no Shabbos that goes by that we don't read the parsha of Lot. There's no Shabbos which goes by that we don't read this parsha. Oh, that's right. Every Shabbos read the parsha of Lot. Everyone knows that." Right? My time, what's the reason why? Because that pasuk, which we quoted in Mishlei, which says l'sa'av yevakesh nifrod, that the person who pursues desire ends up getting separated from the community. So the pasuk continues b'chol tushia yizgala. In all Torah enclaves, he's exposed. In all Torah enclaves, he's exposed. So it's alluding to the idea that this parasha needs to be exposed and read every single Shabbos. And the Medrash says that every single Shabbos, this parasha is read. There's not a single Shabbos. The wording of it is interesting. There's not a single Shabbos that this parasha is not. We don't read this parasha of Lot. Not a single Shabbos. We don't read the parasha of Lot, which obviously is very perplexing. Right? When was the last time we don't do that? But apparently, that one of the Mephorshim says apparently it was once the practice every Shabbos to read publicly in the shul the story of Lot. But whenever that was, it was. Others say that the girsa over here, there's a different girsa of the Medrash. Girsa means textual version of the Medrash. Not every single Shabbos, but rather it's every single Shana. Not a single year goes by, we don't read it. But that's difficult because obviously we read it every year because it's in the parasha every year. That's puzzling. A little bit of a mystical, Kabbalistic explanation of this I saw in the Sefer Teferet Shlomo. I'll say the words. I don't understand what I'm saying. It says over here in the Teferet Shlomo, he says that, Hayadua, it's well known, Liyodei Chain, to those graced individuals, Ki Atzadikim, the righteous people, gamzos ikka pulasim b'torah v'mitzvahs, their primary activity in learning and learning Torah and doing mitzvahs is a yichud panimi, is this inner unification. Limshoch la'olam azhazah, to draw down into this world, neshamas kadoshas, holy neshamas, when? B'lel Shabbos. There's such an idea that on the Lel Shabbos, the night of Shabbos, every Friday night, there is a concept, there's a Kabbalistic concept that the creation of neshamas, the birth of neshamas, there is an idea that Lel Shabbos is a time for procreation and therefore it's a time for when neshamas come down. But there's something very holy, very, very mystical about the night of Shabbos, about an emanations of neshamas. For this reason, a person needs to have proper focus when saying Brei Pri Agafen on the wine before Kiddush on Lel Shabbos in order to bring down the neshamas. To bring the neshamas into this world, you have to have proper kavana when saying Kiddush on wine on Friday night. Ki yayin remez le'olam abina, because wine is somehow associated with a certain spiritual realm from which souls are hewn from. But the point is that the wine has this association with the upper world, an upper supernal world from where neshamas are hewn from, come from. And therefore, when you say Kiddush on Friday night, this is what tzaddikim do. They have this proper, they have this kavana that neshamas are coming to this world on Friday night. So he connects it. He says, this is the allusion in the daughters of Saint Tzolofchad, the daughters of Lot, right? The daughters of Lot, they wanted to give wine to their father because they wanted to bring new neshamas into the world. They wanted to bring new neshamas. So wine is the case. Therefore, so wine on Friday night is somehow this idea. And therefore, not a single, going back to the Medrash, he explains, when the Medrash says not a single Shabbos goes by, that we don't read the Parsha of Lot, it's not referring to the actual reading of the Parsha, but rather the reliving of the Parsha. Every single, not a single Shabbos goes by without the reliving of the Parsha of Lot, because we're bringing the Shamas into the world at Kiddush specifically, or somehow that affects, that starts the engine going or something, whatever that means. But that's a very Kabbalistic idea, right? That's just a Kabbalistic idea. A practical explanation is given by, I shouldn't say that's not practical, I don't mean to say, not to say that, but it's a bit more of a relatable one to the average person, is Rav Shimon Schwab. So Rav Shimon Schwab was the rabbi in Washington Heights, a great rabbi living, I met him a few number of times. So he says very simply that, you know, what is Shabbos and what do we do on Shabbos? Shabbos is a holy time. It's a holy time. It's a time to reconnect. It's a time to be connected to other people, but connected to Hashem, connected to mitzvahs, connected to Torah. Even though we're enjoying you know, the food on Shabbos, we're having Onik Shabbos. As we've said many times, the Onik Shabbos, the physical enjoyment on Shabbos, the physical enjoyment of food, and, you know, having cholent and good food, etc., it's all in the context of a heightened spiritual experience. Obviously, a person shouldn't overindulge in Shabbos, but if a person has a Suda and you combine with the Suda, with all the good food, Zemira songs and Divrei Torah, the whole day, it's a day of spiritual elevation, right? We all know that. Shabbos is a day of spiritual elevation, going to shul and the Divrei Torah and the learning and the drushes and the Onik Shabbos. It's a day of just beautiful spiritual elevation, Shabbos. Spiritual elevation. But what happens though? What happens after Shabbos? Now, it's very, very good we're discussing this now because the clocks went back last week. And now Motzi Shabbos is now you can do stuff on Motzi Shabbos, right? Everyone's been waiting the whole year for when the clocks go back because now we can do, now we have a whole night. I have a whole night. And he says, sadly, what happens is after Shabbos is over, so many people, they quickly take off their Shabbos clothes. They quickly go to the computers. They quickly are going out. They're going to the movies. They're going to get pizza and everything. And like in a snap of a finger, it's all gone. It's all gone. Shabbos is gone. They're waiting for Shabbos to be over to have fun and to do whatever weekday activity is their mundane activity. This is not the picture of Shabbos. This is not the picture of Shabbos. The picture of Shabbos is that it leaks out and it overflows into the Motzi Shabbos as well. That's why we have a Malava Malka. That's why we're supposed to keep our big day Shabbos on Motzi Shabbos. It's not a proper thing to take your big day Shabbos off on Motzi Shabbos. It still has the light of Shabbos upon us after Shabbos is over. See, he says the rabbi is alluding to, over here, read his words, Osama Noshim, those people, Shemin Hagim B'Kedusha, whose custom is with Kedusha, Menucha B'Simcha B'Meshe Yom HaShabbos, they fulfill and they practice a whole day of Menucha and Kedusha on Shabbos. But then Miyad Acher Shabbos, but right after Shabbos, posthumous big day Shabbos, they throw the Shabbos clothes off from upon themselves. The Chozum Le'iske Chol, and they just go back to their regular weekday activities, but massive math and business, the phone, the internet, the etc. V'atzim Le'is Asher, and they're very, very enthusiastic to now make money again. V'nifrodim Maher Min HaKadosh, and they run away very quickly from all of the Kedusha that was resting upon them throughout the entire Shabbos. For Ot V'macha Taivas Libam, and they're just pursuing the desires of their hearts. Kemosh Omer Kosel, like the Pasuk says, about Lot, the Taiva, Yevakesh, Nifrat, someone who is pursuing Taiva, desire, is going to end up becoming more isolated in life. And it's unfortunate. I mean, I don't want to speak too much about it, but it's unfortunate that the picture, unfortunately, in many places, is that after Shabbos is over, it's just this. It's like this, as I said before the beginning. It's the Motzi Shabbos dash, the Motzi Shabbos dash to the pizza shops, to the sushi places, to the restaurants. But the lesson is not to run away after Shabbos right away, and then to lose it all. Upazer mesinas atzma kadmona shalom. By doing so, we are removing ourselves away from the creation, from the creator of the universe, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from Hashem. And that's what it means. That's what the Medrash means. This is a picture of Lot. That's the picture of Lot. Hence, the Medrash says, there's not a single Shabbos that goes by that we don't read for ourselves the parasha of Lot. Not a single Shabbos doesn't go by without our experiencing and reliving and experiencing for ourselves what happened to Lot and that separation of separating ourselves from Hashem, despite the fact we were close to him on Shabbos. So this again it brings us to really appreciating general Shabbos, and appreciating and understanding how Shabbos is all week long. Shabbos is all week long. We know that when we say the Shir Shal Yom every single day, the song of the day, we mention Shabbos. We know that we are supposed to, when you find foods and good foods during the week, save them for Shabbos. We know this is a very important idea. But what this is bringing into focus also is how the Shabbos light has to radiate out suddenly, immediately into Motzi Shabbos, to hold on to Shabbos, Motzi Shabbos. But I want to read to you also how it also applies specifically as a special focus on Erev Shabbos as well. Erev Shabbos, today, right now. So this is in the book which I have of my Rosh Hashiva Zitzal, of different anecdotes, different vignettes about his life. And I've shared with you before, you know, what it was like for spending Shabbos with him. you know, and how Shabbos was a whole different, you know, whole different world, you know, popped, and something else just popped into my head. This is one of my stories that when I was first in the yeshiva, so on Motzi Shabbos in the wintertime, used to give a special shir, Pachad Yitzchak shir, Pachad, one of the Sfarim by Rav Hutner, the safe by Rav Hutner. So it was, we used to go to his house, to his basement, and, that, and this is Motzi Shabbos in the wintertime. We had longer, more time. You know, that's a good example of what we do on Motzi Shabbos, because these maimarim were very long and you needed like about 2 hours to, you know, to sit, to teach them. So we did it in the wintertime. That was our Motzi Shabbos activity. So we were learning the maimar about Shabbos, the sefer on Shabbos, not on, you know, about Shabbos. And he was talking about how Shabbos is a different world, it's a different reality. And he said, when people call, right, Shabbos, like when you're invited to a meal, or you call the meals of Shabbos, lunch and dinner. When he was describing how people call them lunch and dinner, he like slammed his hand on the table and he says, "It's nit Shabbos lunch. It's Suda Shabbos." That's how he said it. Like, he's like, Suda Shabbos, not a Shabbos lunch. It's a Suda Shabbos. It's a different word. It's a different. And then, you know, it explains why if you have the Suda at 10:30 in the morning, people, when I was in Yeshiva in Israel, our Suda was at 10:30 in the morning. Well, maybe it's even earlier than that, maybe 10 o'clock in the morning. How can you eat lunch? Lunch? It's not lunch. It's Suda Shabbos. Therefore, everything is different about Shabbos. Therefore, if it's 10:30 in the morning, that's when we're having the Suda. It's not governed by the weekday rules. It's different. Well, isn't that the 7:30 davening? That was what it was there. But the point is, it's not governed by weekday rules. Shabbos is a different reality. Different. Just on another occasion, so I'm mentioning another occasion, I was with him once. I was learning with him privately, and he said to me, and we were learning a pasuk in the Chumash describing Shabbos, and Shabbos is called one of the pasukim. It's a few times it says Shabbos Shabbosan, Shabbos Shabbosan. So he explained, and based upon the Rashi, what does Shabbosan mean? It's a whole different reality. And he said to me, he says, yesterday didn't exist, and tomorrow doesn't exist. All that exists right now is Shabbos. Yesterday's reality, as we are right now, presently in Friday, on Sunday we'll be on Sunday. It's a different dimensions. It's a whole different dimension of existence. Shabbos is a whole elevated dimension of existence. But he says over here, he once told a Talmud, from the first thing in the morning on Erev Shabbos, the whole day is lived as if it is 10 minutes before licht benching, lighting Shabbos candles. Hachana, preparation for Shabbos, wasn't a utilitarian issue of making sure to be ready in time, nor was it a local halacha in Kavod Shabbos itself. It was a mindset, one that in many ways encompassed his whole picture of the Avodas HaChaim of a Yid, the whole service of being a Jew. But it was one Purim that he spoke it out most sharply. It was an Erev Shabbos, so that year Purim was an Erev Shabbos. And it was short, and he was desperately trying to get out as much as of the Torah he wanted to say within the short time that he had in order to be able to prepare for Shabbos. Finally, he burst out, and he said, Adam was created on Erev Shabbos. Man was created on Erev Shabbos because his avoda is to get the world ready for Shabbos. Man was created on Erev Shabbos because our entire avoda in life, our whole purpose, our raison d'etre in the world is to get the world ready for Shabbos. That is the whole taich, that's the whole definition, meaning of what it means to be a Yid, Erev Shabbos. The whole definition of our lives is Erev Shabbos, getting the world ready for Shabbos. That's our mission. That's our mission, to get the world ready for Shabbos. So therefore, Shabbos is the weekly microcosm of the purpose of existence. Erev Shabbos is getting ready for that. That's our purpose, that's our mission. And therefore, when Motzi Shabbos comes along, we shouldn't be running to kind of get out of it. We should be trying to hold on to it for as long as possible and not be like a lot and not be guilty of this that the Medrash says, that every single Shabbos goes by that we don't read the Parsha of Lot. So that's the Medrash. It's a beautiful idea.
Beautiful. Yes.